reality, we are not only in the middle of the summer, we are also in the middle of a story whose characters invite us to consider our own character. Last Sunday, the character of two nations lurked in the ill-fated relationship of Isaac and Rebecca's twins, and provoked us to think about the character of our own nation lurking in the characters who lead it. This morning, we have only one character to consider. One brother who is alone in a certain place in the dark. One man who is about to come face to face with God. The story of Jacob's dream, David Steinmetz writes, one of the most incredible church scholars of our time, the story of Jacob's dream is the story of a frail and sinful human being, frightened and homesick, exhausted by his hurried journey from Beersheba, overtaken by nightfall in the midst of an empty field, uncertain of the future toward which he is drawn by his own decisions and the providence of his father's God. We pick up the story when Jacob left. Jacob left Isaac and Rebecca, who prompted the journey, his mother warning him of his twins' murderous desire for revenge, his father commanding Jacob to go up to Padan Aram to find a wife among Abraham's descendants. Jacob left Esau, whose plaintive cry in the aftermath of his brother's deception, "Have you only one blessing, Father?" will haunt Jacob day and night until they meet again. Jacob left the house of his birth, not knowing where he was going, just as his grandfather Abraham had left country and kindred and his father's house, not knowing where he was going, except for the fact that Abraham went as the Lord told him. Jacob left as an exile from his family and from himself, the quiet man, the homebody, the mama's boy, vanished. Jacob left. What strikes me is the immediate vulnerability of this character who had seemed so completely in control of his destiny at the beginning of the story. Playing on his brother's weakness a week ago, he tricked Esau out of his birthright. Taking advantage of his father's age and blindness under his mother's tutelage, as I told the children this morning, he had gotten Isaac's one and only blessing. But when Jacob left, without his bag of tricks, he left as a defenseless fugitive running unwittingly into the arms of God's love. In his unauthorized biography of God, John Shea writes about the coincidence of human vulnerability and God's visitation. When we reach our limits, he begins. When our ordered worlds collapse. When we cannot enact our moral ideals. When we are disenchanted. We often enter into the awareness of mystery. We are inescapably related to this mystery, which is imminent and transcendent, which issues invitations we must respond to, which is ambiguous about its intentions, and which is real and important beyond all else. Our dwelling within mystery is both menacing and promising, a relationship of exceeding darkness and undeserved. Jacob's father had been bound by his own father, a knife to his neck. Looking ahead, it was the future place of the holy temple of prayer and sacrifice, of the human attempt to come close to God. Think about the first night you spent as a young adult at a literal and figurative distance from the people who had been telling you who you were since the day you were born. Or the first night you spent alone after a marriage ended, a spouse died, a diagnosis began to sink in. Suspended between past and future, with nothing to tether you to the earth. It is a place of purity and danger, Aviva Zornberg writes, of great longing and strict distancing. In the second place, then, God encounters us in our vulnerability, in the between places, where nothing is expected, where everything is risky. Well, in this certain place, the sun sets and Jacob falls asleep. The third condition for our coming face to face with the unconditional love of God is darkness. Darkness. Personally, I would have been awake the whole night had I been in Jacob's sandals, alone in a field, not knowing where I was in the darkness. Alone and dark in fearful places, I am nothing if not vigilant. You know, I say that, and I remember as a child when we lived in Chicago, and children taking more than they let you know. This is a terrible story to tell you. I remember listening to this awful story of a child, and then we ended up in Lake Michigan. And as children are wont to do, you think there are monsters under your bed. I remember as a child falling asleep only out of utter weariness, because the whole night before I fell asleep, my head was turning this way and that way, watching to make sure that no one was in there to get me. That explains a lot. If I ever went to therapy. The waking effort, Zornberg says, is to know, not to miss any detail, to absorb all knowledge into conscious, cognitive life. But, she goes on, God wants this sleep. God stage manages the abrupt darkness so that Jacob will sleep and dream here, because darkness is a way of knowing God. Likewise, Walter Brueggemann observes that the encounter of Jacob with God takes place not in wakeful control, but in a time of vulnerable yielding while he is asleep. As Calvin's heirs, you and I are prone to think reasonable thoughts about God in the light of day. Belief is the waking effort not to miss any detail, to absorb all knowledge into our conscious cognitive lives, to fit the possibility of God into a scientific worldview, for instance, rather than to fit the world into the relationship of exceeding darkness and undeserved light for which we were made. Perhaps that is why we worship God in the morning, when we are most alert and thoughtful, when we are least vulnerable to emotion and the fancies of human imagination. Perhaps that is also why worship in our tradition can be so unengaging and controlled and boring. has come to cover up our broken hearts or hide the gaping wounds in our hearts, and we're inclined to beseech and bemoan the shadows that lengthen. Darkness compounds our vulnerability. Shabbat, after all, begins at sunset. Evensong as well. At the end of the day and in the darkness, God knows that our fears, paradoxically, will open us to the joy of a meeting. If Jacob had not slept, he would not have dreamed of God and angels, would not have received his first message from God, and would not know that this certain place is a holy place. Utterly vulnerable, in a certain place, far from home, in the dead of night, Jacob dreams of a ladder, or likely a ramp, set up on the earth that reaches to heaven. Angels of God are ascending and descending on it. Heaven, the place from which God comes to us, is having to do with earth. With Jacob's world of fear and terror, of loneliness and guilt. Having gotten his attention, the angels of the Lord give way to the Lord who, in person, stands beside Jacob and says to Jacob what Jacob could only hear alone, at a distance from the known, in the darkness. God says, I'm with you. I'm with you. The words are the heart of the biblical faith. Words that God continues to say and be to God's people in the wilderness and exile. Continues to be to the Gentiles and God's Son, God's only Son, God's beloved. Continues to be to the church here now. Spirit, behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. Then God says, I will keep you wherever you go. Think Psalm 121. The Lord is thy keeper, thy shade on thy right hand. He will keep you from all evil. He will keep your soul. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this day forward. Think Psalm 91, for he will give his angels charge of you to keep you in all your ways. When she calls to me, I will answer her, I will be with her in trouble, I will rescue him and honor him. Think the psalm that Jackson just sang, Psalm 139, whither shall we go from thy spirit? Even darkness is not dark to you. And think Psalm 23. Beginning to end. Jacob hears in God's words, Zohar says, a concern for the vulnerability of human existence that needs protection at every point. To which we soon will sing, when through the deep waters I call you to go, the rivers of sorrow shall not so that we need never again walk alone in the darkness, even the darkness of the grave. The God we meet face to face in Jesus Christ is the God who has promised to be with us, to accompany and keep us, will leave us only when he presents us perfectly ourselves before the throne of God's grace, when God's love will be all in all. So this was left out of the lectionary reading because they like nice readings that make us feel good about ourselves. I added Jacob's response to God's promise, God's unconditional love. What was it? Jacob added an if. He vows to trust God conditionally. Jacob rose early in the morning and said, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat, clothing to wear, and that I come back to my father's house in peace, then Jacob said this in the morning. It was a waking effort to know, not to dismiss any detail, to be reasonable about God's presence and help. We do the same. If God keeps us in the ways we want to be kept, then God shall be our God. If God is absent to our way of